from a short-term perspective, I think it might be too early to say that the central bank will raise rates anytime soon, because as of right now, inflation still remains anchored below the 5% benchmark, as well as our exchange rate remains stable.
Which asset class would you expect perhaps to basically be at the forefront of where maybe investors might make their money?
Personally, I think that investors are likely to focus on collective investment schemes because they give investors an avenue to diversify their risks across different asset classes, as opposed to focus on one asset class that's facing high uncertainty due to the war.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Make Money the Podcast, the show where we not only tell you, but also show you what's happening to your money and what could happen. And as always, this is guided by conversations with the experts of money. And happy to introduce the topic for this week. And we are looking back in time to the first quarter. We are already in April 2026. So what has been happening through January, February, March, and what does that mean for our investment landscape? And what we've seen externally also is maybe we thought Venezuela could be the main challenge externally until we saw the US-Israel-Iran war kick off sometimes at the end of February. So basically, March we've had to live with this. And domestically, what we've seen is a continued cut in interest rates from the Central Bank of Kenya. And of course, that has meant lower returns from lower risk assets like treasury bills, treasury bonds, and of course your money market funds have also been affected from these. The equities market still remains buoyant. We are up about 4.4% if you are looking through March 31st. And to continue this conversation on understanding the investment landscape, and we are calling this the first quarter scorecard for 2026, I'm joined by Mr. Teddy Irungu. Mr. Teddy Irungu is the head of research at Rock Advisors. So this is an investment bank, and now you're licensed as an investment bank, so that would be correct to say so.
Yeah, it's a rock investment bank, yeah.
Thank you for being on the podcast, and I think we begin with the external environment before we move it closer home here in Kenya. And the first thing to observe, of course, is what has been happening with US and Iran, and of course the challenges that has meant. Now, the interesting thing of note here is the same time last year we saw US tariffs come around April 1st, then it was a bit later, not in Q1. But basically what we are seeing is some similarities here that external shocks will always be with us. And do we assume now going forward that we'll always have something happening out there that, you know, you can never discount, you can never think this is the year where we'll have nothing happening on the outside that will be affecting us internally? What do you make of what's happening?
I think short answer is yes, because I feel like if you look at the last 6 years as an example, we've seen that financial market volatility, instead of being an episodic thing, has become more of a regular occurrence. If you look, starting with the pandemic, we saw that countries enacted stringent lockdown procedures that shut down industries and supply chains. Following on to 2022, we saw the Russia-Ukraine war, which impacted commodity prices and also sent input prices higher, which also led to the post-pandemic inflationary issue. Then, following after that, we saw the tariffs, as you said, that further disintegrated supply chains that existed. And now we have the war, which was also impacting the commodity prices. So I feel like as the investment community right now, we need to have an overhaul rethink how we're valuing companies in the market. Traditionally, using our models, we usually assume over our forecasting period, inputs are usually moving at a stable pace. But as you see now, we're getting more issues with the supply chains. So I feel like we need a dynamic overthinking of our valuation models, now including scenario-based stress testing or geopolitical risk premium additions. This could lead to higher discount rates and higher minimum returns requirements by investors. So we also believe that this is actually one of the main reasons that we're seeing foreign outflows in the Kenyan market, because investors are starting to rethink that emerging markets, which are typically more prone to the effects of geopolitical tensions, are more risky. So we're seeing that some of the foreign investors are de-risking, moving their capital away from equities in the emerging markets and going back to the developed markets for a safer return.
Coming home, what we have seen, or what has been the theme over, let's say even the past 2 years, has been interest rate cuts by the Central Bank of Kenya. And of course, when that rate is cut, what we tend to see is what we consider as lower risk assets, so your money market funds, your treasury bills, your treasury bonds, the return on them has come down quite considerably. We are still above 8% for the 1 year or the 364-day T-bill. I think I was looking at the highest MMF returning now annualized is giving an indication of slightly just above 11%, meaning there's much pressure, and most of the MMFs are now around single-digit rates now, so it's between 6 and 10%, and then you have the outliers who are still posting up an annual return of more than 10%. For someone who thinks, okay, the Central Bank of Kenya has cut rates to a point, you know, we had, through Q1, we had, you know, cut since August 2024. We saw a pause, of course, in April, which now would be in Q2. But taking that into context then, is there an expectation that now maybe we might see a place where rates somehow sit flat, maybe perhaps, especially with the rate pause that came in April? Do I now think that if my MMF was around 10%, it might hold there now for some time? There'll be no pressure for it to go lower and lower, and, you know, having me rethink where I place my money, in a sense.
In my view, I feel like this is just a short-term reprieve, especially for since the enactment of the easy monetary policy environment from August 2024, where we saw interest rates at 13% and have reduced now to 8.75%. I feel that this short-term reprieve is due to the central bank adopting a wait-and-see approach, because, as we know, the war has led to increase in oil prices internationally, and the central bank expecting this to filter through to the local market, with the next oil price review, I think, as of April 14th, which is today, expected to rise higher. So the central bank is adopting this wait-and-see approach to see the extent at which the inflation will impact the local market. However, as we've seen, a U.S. and Iran war has currently entered into a pause phase, because we're seeing that they are starting to engage in actual conversations on how to end the war. So this actually sent oil prices more stable last week, though with the Trump blockade, it's uncertain as of now, but we can see that there are steps being taken to de-escalate the situation. So as of right now, if the steps being taken actually actualize in a peace deal going forward, I believe that as of the latter half of this year, we might start seeing the central bank to continue to enact its easy monetary policy if inflation does come down from the elevated levels right now.
You bring up inflation, which is a good point, and it's my next point is there's an expectation that whatever happens from the fallout of US-Iran, inflation, we might see pressure on inflation, meaning higher prices for commodities, pressure on the exchange rate when, you know, you're using more dollars effectively to purchase the same amount of goods as you did last year. Mm-hmm. The expectation when we see the inflation pressures come up, and, you know, anyone who was following the earlier this month, the Central Bank of Kenya post-monetary policy briefing, there was an indication of where they would expect inflation to go. For someone now who has seen their return fall, especially their risk-free or their low-risk return fall, you know, someone actually asked me directly, should I expect interest rates to move the other way, because there could be inflation pressure, and we know how central banks and investors perhaps adjust to inflation pressures. There's an expectation that rates go higher, so meaning I might earn a more enhanced return if perhaps my MMF will go to 11%, if the TB rate might come closer to 10% from where it is now, the highest around 8.7%, like you mentioned earlier. Should we be expecting, is it a wait and see? You mentioned the wait and see approach being the broad assessment here by the Central Bank of Kenya. But going forward, if that inflation pressure is to prove real, should we expect some adjustment and perhaps, you know, more return coming to the table for investors when those rates move higher?
From a short-term perspective, I think it might be too early to say that the central bank will raise rates anytime soon, because as of right now, inflation still remains anchored below the 5% benchmark, as well as our exchange rate remains stable, supported by the healthy forex exchange reserve buffers, which I think at the moment cover around 5.7 months of import cover. So I think that if the central bank was to raise rates at this moment, it would be a bit premature, because all the macroeconomic indicators are currently stable. But if this war does persist into the latter half of the year, and we see headline inflation tick up towards the upper bound 7.5%, and exchange rate volatility increase, we might see a central bank seeking to hike rates. My own personal view, I feel like the central bank will adopt this wait-and-see approach for the majority of the year, and any likelihood of a rate hike will occur in Q1 2027.
Moving now to a more specific asset class here, and it's about equities. I think we've tackled much of the macro picture. What we've seen through 31st March is the equities market has been up around 4.4%, so you could call it 2.5%. And of course, what we've seen is the momentum has continued. It might have slowed down, but we haven't seen any capitulation in terms of valuations or prices in the stock market. And, you know, you're still at a healthy position in a sense. But there's some standouts here, of course. If you take a look at the top five counters so far in the year and through Q1, there's quite a heavy bias towards the growing companies. So you have your Sassinis, you have your IGADs, you have your Africa Megacorp that are among the top five. Perhaps maybe the expectation, especially with the earnings season, was maybe a more typical, it's telecoms with Safaricom or banks, with the majority of them reporting improved earnings. If you are to take an assessment of the top five companies or the top gainers so far this year, is there anything to take away from how the picture is looking so far?
So in terms of the top gainers, this especially in Q1, I think investors are looking for the next breakout story, especially in the small to mid-cap companies, which usually offer high capital gains and dividend prospects. So what we saw, especially in the examples of Sassini and IGADs, is that in their recent half-year results, they marked an earnings turnaround. Sassini reported an earnings of 188 million, up from a loss of 560 million the year before, as well as IGADs, which reported an earnings of 4.16 million, up from a loss of 15 million the year before. Additionally, Sassini recently completed its sale of a coffee estate in Kiambu, worth 7.9 billion. And that's actually more than double its current book value. So with this, investors are actually positioning in that counter in anticipation for a special dividend once the earnings are recognized in their financials. And in terms of IGAD, though historically their earnings have been very volatile, so maybe dividend prospects might be uncertain, I think investors are positioning themselves in the counter in anticipation that the earnings momentum will be carried forward in the long term.
Yeah. The other side of the story has been banks. Impressive results for most of the banks. But we are seeing some specific counters, perhaps even trailing the Nairobi All-Share Index. So we are at 4.4% for the Nairobi All-Share Index, which gives us an overall view of how the stock market has moved. But you're finding counters like Equity and KCB, despite their improved earnings and improved dividend payouts to shareholders, perhaps they've not matched the market or even surpassed the market. Is there a specific factor of note that perhaps casually people have observed the same, that, hey, we expected KCB and Equity perhaps because of the performance they posted and the dividend they paid, the prices would have moved much higher. But, you know, you look at them and I think that 3.3, 3.1%, not as impressive as most people would have assumed or as guessed maybe a month back.
There are actually two main factors that I can attribute to the modest gains that were realized by KCB and Equity, especially in the earnings season. And the first one being, I think the market had already priced in this elevated earnings and dividend prospects before the earnings season. So as we saw, as of end of year 2025, KCB had realized a 58% year-on-year gain, while Equity realized a 38% year-on-year gain. Especially Equity, after its impressive Q3 results, I think investors actually took positions in the counter in anticipation that this earnings momentum will be carried on to their full-year results. And KCB, as following its announcement of a special dividend, as well as a special dividend and interim dividend, investors are also expecting this dividend momentum to carry on to their full-year results. So we had already seen that since they had already taken up positions in the counters, this limited the upside potential after earnings were released. I think the second factor was that market sentiment, especially in the month of March, was heavily impacted by the geopolitical tensions in the Middle East. There were elevated outflows in the market during that time, especially foreign investors, because we saw that the month of March actually recorded the highest number of outflows during the year at 4 billion as compared to February and January, as well as we saw like local investors actually starting to secure partial profits in their current holdings in the market in anticipation to hold cash in anticipation for the inflationary impact of the war. So I believe that these two factors are actually one of the main reasons that KCB and Equity didn't perform as well in the earnings period as compared to what maybe the regular investor would have expected.
Q1 is done and dusted, and if you are driving a car, it's basically in your rear view mirror and it's going behind, you know, January, February, March, gone, dusted, done. We are not going back to that. It gives us a good opportunity to look forward, you know. Of course, it's sort of set the tone for the year, and, you know, if you're going through a road and you've noticed potholes, maybe sometimes you can expect more potholes ahead, or maybe the road might smoothen out. When we look forward across the year, and you've set some tones, especially for the equities market, what we are seeing in the macro picture, which asset class would you expect perhaps to not really over-deliver, but basically be at the forefront of where maybe investors might make their money across the year from the indications you've seen in Q1?
Personally, I think that investors are likely to focus on collective investment schemes because they give investors an avenue to diversify their risks across different asset classes, as opposed to focus on one asset class that's facing high uncertainty due to the war. With an investor focusing on the collective investment schemes, they diversify their risks while balancing their return that will allow them to not only gain access to the Kenya market, but also seen some collective investor schemes allowing investors to take part in international markets. So I feel by diversifying your risks both locally and internationally, it will allow investors to realize more secure returns as opposed to, let's say, investing in the local equities market that's facing significant selling pressure due to the war as investors try to secure positions in anticipation of maybe a possible rate hike, or the fixed income market that if an investor was to invest in today and the CBK was to raise rates in the future, they might realize a loss because as yields rise, bond prices decline. So they might lose on the capital gains prospects. So I think the collective investor schemes for now offer both a diversified risk and return avenue for investors.
You mentioned collective investment scheme as what perhaps might be the differentiator because of the diversity aspect. Mm-hmm. And I know one might wonder, is it the MMF? Is it the special fund? Which is it a balanced fund? And I'll ask this question this way. If you had, say, 50,000, or as the kids would say, 50K, or 100K to invest today, and you know you have a buyer, you're already thinking collective investments were the way to go. Investing for the remainder of the year, which now I believe is around 8-9 months to go, where would you be putting your money today if you had 50 or 100,000 shillings even?
I think I'd employ a balanced portfolio type of view where the main proportion of my investment, as I said earlier, will be in a collective investment scheme that personally will allow me to gain access to international markets. So I think I'll put 50% of my portfolio in that because it will allow me to get returns in developed markets, which are typically, as I said earlier, are typically less impacted by geopolitical risk as local markets. I think the second portion of my investment will also go to the local equities market. I know banks have recently announced their results with spectacular dividend payouts. So I'll probably, as an investor, I'll probably wait past the book closure dates because after book closure dates for banks especially, we usually tend to see the share price of a bank declining. And that presents a buying opportunity for investors who believe that in the long term, these banks will continue to perform well going forward. And in the fixed income market, I think I'll minimize my duration exposure. As I said earlier, if the central bank were to hike rates in the future, if I was to be exposed in the long term, my price, I'll be impacted by the price decline in bonds. But if I was to just be exposed in the short term, the short end of the yield curve, I'll be able to realize coupon gains while minimizing my risks to interest rate hikes in the future. And I think the last portion of my portfolio will also go to the crypto market because it's a very highly liquid 24-hour market that typically tends to have a low correlation with traditional assets. So it also helps me diversify my risks from global issues as well as having an avenue where I can liquidate it quickly to now invest if any opportunities come up in the future.
So diversification seems to be the key for the remainder of the year.
Yeah.
So Mr. Teddy, thanks a lot for being on the podcast this week.
Thanks for having me.
And that's Mr. Teddy Rungu. He's the head of research at Rock Advisors or Rock Investment Bank. He's been here with the quarter one scorecard. We'll hope to look at the scores again at full year or half year stage and get to see how much of this panned out, how much changed, and what would be the factors driving investments for the next year, perhaps. And that has been another episode of Make Money, the podcast by The Business Daily. My name is Kefa Muirore, and as always, catch me on the next episode. But before then, make your money work for you. Goodbye.